Amen. 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 Well, as the kids head off for Children's Church, it's good to see you this morning. Again, my name is Michael. I'm the pastor here. And if you are a visitor, you've never been here before, love to get to know you a little bit better. Make sure you fill out one of the visitor cards. If you don't know where those are, then we'll get you one before you leave service today. And so we've been in a series in James called Practical Faith. If you're ever wondering just how to live out your faith well, some pitfalls to avoid and some things to maybe focus more your time and effort on, then this would be the book. And yeah, I love that what Kristen mentioned about our church family. I'm here today, whether you're here in person or you're online. I know some of us are sick and out. Some of that stuff is going around, so as it will continue to go around probably for the season. but I love that we can do that as well. You can tune in online. And yeah, the things that we get to do together, the Pie and Praise next week, make sure you don't miss that as well. And we have opportunities to fellowship during this season. And so, as I was going through the book of James, you know, there's probably some passages that, you know, you might avoid if you had the choice. And one of the things that we do here is we don't do that when we're going through books of the Bible. Sometimes I get to a spot and I'm like, oh, if we could just maybe not talk about that, that would be, you know, better. And so today, I guess I want more of the focus. I think more of the focus for us should be prefaced by Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. And so I'll read that, but before I do that, I want to share just a different take on this. Maybe if you were to ask someone, you know, what does true happiness entail? A lot of people in the world might say, well, they might say it might have something to do with money, or, you know, that good a good house, a good car, a good job or situation that tends to lean towards material wealth or success or prosperity in that area. And as I was looking for some articles, some things that had to do with that, I came across this one in regards to true happiness. And it has to do with this question, does it come from material wealth? And there was an article put out in the Seattle Times in 2010, May of 2010. And it was actually by a Muslim gentleman writing a section on faith. And when asked this question, what is happiness? He said, it's something we all want, but how many of us know how to achieve it? Material wealth is not the answer. We live in a materialistic society. An excess of material goods does not bring the sort of long-term contentment, the genuine feeling of satisfaction and peace that is the foundation for a happy life. For rich and poor alike, the desire to have more, newer, better, fancier stuff seems to be a fact of human nature. So, it is important to know and understand that the unceasing pursuit of material goods can destroy one's sense of contentment. Welcome to church, by the way. And so if you've ever looked up any other external resources, I know we look to the Bible and, you know, those things seem clear to us. And we're like, oh yeah, you know, don't fixate, don't focus on that. But when we look outside of that, even other religious systems, we'll see that they also point away from materialism being the thing that makes us happy. But yet we live in a culture where that's just sort of the fixation over and over and over again. It's the newer. It's the better. It's the greater. But does it make us happy? No, it doesn't. And so I'll turn to better words, words from Jesus, which among many that he spoke in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, 19 through 21, it says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So interesting. If, you know, we read this, and it always kind of interests me if we come, for, like, depending on where we live, like, geographically, it kind of changes our perspective on some of these things. Like, you know, we can all relate to, oh, yeah, I've seen moths before. Maybe you put a bag of clothes away in the attic, and a moth got in there, and it's just like, well, it's just not good anymore, right? but when you live in Western New York, and you hear the word rust, that means something a little bit different, right? So, you know, growing up in Texas, you know, you hear the word rust, and you're, oh, yeah, something's been sitting there for 100 years. And then it's like slightly rusted, and you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I know what he's talking about. But then, you know, you move here, and you're like, why is everybody's cars, like, just, you know, completely rusted out, and you're like, why are they, is it doing that thing around the wheel well where it's just like deteriorating, and it's like only 5 years old? Like, that seems, you know, strange to me. And then I quickly became aware of the fact that if you're not just like constantly cleaning your car, you get like the undercoating, or you're not like worried about that stuff, then pretty quickly it'll be like, oh yeah, moth and rust really does destroy really quickly. Of course, the New York State Department of Highways or whoever it is helps it along, right? Helps it along the way. We're thankful for that because we're not doing all over the road. But that is a side effect, isn't it? So I just want us to think about that as we, Jesus' words, an external perspective of true happiness and how none of it has to relate to material wealth. And as we go into this section of James, only six verses today, okay? So you're welcome. We've been hitting like tackling a chapter at a time the last couple of weeks. We'll slow down and hit all of verse or all of chapter 5 over the next 3 weeks. And so the first verse here and the first fill in the blank is holding, right? Holding. Just think about it as we like to hold on to a lot of stuff, especially for those who are like, you know, control oriented, like I like things to be a certain way, you know, I don't want anything to change. Well, James is going to turn our focus here to this having to do with material wealth and money and possessions. And so you can put holding, and then beside that you could put we hold on to everything we think is valuable. We hold on to everything we think is valuable, right? It disappears really quickly. It's like sand, right? Or, you know, whatever. It's just, it's gone really quickly. And so he says in verse 1, come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Wow, James, thank you for that, all right? And I think when we first start reading this, you know, we're like, I don't think this is for me. And it's kind of not so nice wording, and I think we're just going to, you know, skip to the next part, right? We can go to patience and suffering. We'll talk about that next week. That sounds better than even talking about money, and I'm sure, you know, some of us, as we were like, oh, James chapter 5, verse 1, I think I know, yeah, material wealth. Oh, no, we're talking about tithing today. Is that what we're talking about? I don't see that anywhere else, right? The tithe looks good, right? So, you know, are we worried about that? No, this is about James. It's about God through James looking into our hearts and then saying, is this how we operate? And I know a lot of times, too, you know, we'll read this and go, come now, you rich, you know, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. And we're like, look, we're not rich, right? Especially after COVID, it's like, why is bread like $10? You know, it's not that much, right? But you know what I mean. It's like gas was always expensive, right? And then we're like, wait a second. You know, at least I can get milk for cheaper than gas, right? And even, you know, those things are changing. We're like, why am I going to the grocery store? And it's like, there's, you know, there's nothing left. And so I know it's easy for us in our context, even in our time period of history, when things just seem so tumultuous and so like, you know, say the word inflation, right? And everybody's like, gets stressed, right? Because that's been our reality. But you might be interested. I was just doing some studies on this and wealth in the world, and you may have heard this before, but let's just say the average or median income is $70,000. That's the average American. Median income is $70,000. And I know for many of us, too, that's like with both spouses working, right, to get to that point. And then if you look at the statistics, if you make $70,000 a year, you still have more than 91.8% of the rest of the world. So we wake up in the morning, probably in a house, probably in a bed that you're able to pay for and sleep in with some nice sheets. And maybe, you know, you got up and had a decent breakfast. Or, you know, I like Cheerios, so that's what I have, right? It's not, you know, too expensive, right? But, you know, you probably have something that you want to eat, and you're probably not going to go without a meal. And when we think about that in our context, you know, James is talking to a group of people that a good group of them were suffering, right? They didn't have maybe all the things that they needed. And we live and operate in a culture when we think about this, everybody else, right, around the world, for the most part, has less than we do. We like reminding our kids, you know, we sit down at the table, you know, you've probably been there before, and it's like, you know, you put something down for dinner and they're like, gross, I'm not eating that. Well, I guess you don't have to eat, right? I mean, or, you know, wait, we're not supposed to say that, right? That kind of stuff. That's child abuse. So, you know, we say, we'll eat the food, right? And because this is what we prepared, and you should be thankful for that. And, you know, and you're trying to, like, temper it because you're like, I worked all week, and, like, I'm tired, and, you know, we made this for you. But have some perspective, right? And sometimes we have to give that to other people, even, you know, our kids. And we're like, somebody today is not going to have anything to eat, right? So does that put it in perspective for us? And so James isn't talking to us and being like, oh, this is, you know, this is not us, right? No, this could very easily be us. And then in verse 2, it says, your riches have rotten, your garments are moth-eaten. So everything, like we talked about last week, where does everything end up for the most part? Dumpster, the trash, a landfill. We're like, no, 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 but this iPhone, it will fix everything, you know? It's like they, every year they have those big announcements, like the new, it's coming, right? The 17, or no, that's like operating, I don't even know what we're on right now. What is it, like 14S, you know, 10X, I don't know. So, you know, the new one's coming out, and it's going to be like, no, it's got this new feature, trust me, you know, you're going to want it, and when you get it, it's just going to make everything better, right? Where are all those iPhones? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, probably not working right now, right? And so, you know, we think, oh, no, that's ridiculous. This isn't going to happen. But as is the technology age, right? It's even more helpful to remind us that those things don't last very long. And they're more expensive, right? It's like, what's the deal with that? So he says, your riches have rotten, your garments are moth-eaten. Caesarius of Arles said this, riches cannot harm a good person because he spends them kindly. Wow. Well, thank you, Mr. Caesarius, church father. He had a positive spin on this, which it's kind of hard to do that when you're reading this and you're like, wow, this is like really not fun to read. He's just, and as he was going through it, he had these words. So I've known a lot of people in my life in the church, people who have been very well off and use what they had to bless others, to help others. And it's like that should be part of who we are. So when we're reading this, I don't think James is much like, you know, taking the sledgehammer, right, and beating us over the head with it and being like, shame on you, you know, for whatever, right? But when we read this, we can go, okay, so there's an alternative viewpoint to this, right? There's an alternative practice, right? We don't have to live and operate like the rest of the world does. But it's so hard, isn't it? I was looking up another statistic this week. Did you know that if you if you turn on the TV just for like, I mean, maybe an hour and a half each day, you get on your phone, you're on social media, you watch the news. Let's just say that takes up maybe 4 to 5 hours of your day, which is less than the average of screen time. You will see, on average, somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000 ads. You're like, wait, that doesn't happen. It does, right? And on average, we'll act on at least one or two of those a day. Isn't it crazy to think about? Like, we're so inundated with like the, I'm not happy with what I have, and it's all driven around materialism, right? I don't have, I want. James talks about that too. You don't have because you don't ask, but you ask wrongly, right? We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Verse 3, continuing, it says, your gold and silver have corroded, and the corrosion will be evidenced against you and will eat your flesh like fire. Ah, you have laid up your treasure in the last days. I mean, this is hard stuff, right? You know, he's not like going like, it might, if you make this your entire focus, you know, it's gonna destroy you slowly, right? This fixation on stuff. And so Bede, who's another church father, said, by refusing to give alms, the rich think that they have done well in saving their treasure. And indeed they have, though they have not seen what it will be used for, namely their own condemnation. Now, this is tough, right? Because, I don't know, maybe some of you have gold and silver logged away. I think there was like I read something this week that they found some sort of like treasure like on a sunken ship, and they're trying to like, you know, go and get it in the ocean. They're like fighting over it. But that's what we do, right? I mean, that's what the world does. That's what our culture does. There's something valuable, gold, silver, precious commodities, and I want that. I want more of it, right? But yet we don't take any of it with us. And that's why, and I think in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about this. He talks a lot about money throughout his ministry, by the way. We just sort of like tend to avoid those passages. But I really think James is going off of what Jesus said. Like, what is our perspective? What's our value? You know, I know we go, well, I can't just give everything, like sell everything, give everything away to the poor, right? Because I got to live, I got to have a house, I got to do life, right? But maybe our perspective just needs to change slightly or a little bit. So even the most valuable things, they'll be degraded, right? Now you can lock it away in a safe. You can put it in a safety deposit box. But then at the end of the day, at the end of time, like, where is all that stuff going to end up, right? It's useful for a purpose. It's a tool we use, but it shouldn't be the thing that we place all of our hope in, right? That new car, a year or two down the road, it's going to be rusting, right? sad. I don't like thinking about it. But that is what is going to happen. Or maybe your portfolio, which has probably taken some hits over the last 10 to 15 years, if I had to guess. You know, I kind of grew up like in that era. I was going into college, and it was like 2008, and people were like, the world is over. Like my 401(k), whatever it is, you know, it's like half gone. And I'm it was just weird for me, like growing up in the church too, because you hear a lot about like building a portfolio and, you know, and setting yourself up and like, you know, I've got this account. And then like the older people around me were just like freaking out. I was going like, what's happening? Like, did Jesus come back and we missed it? You know, what's going on? And like, no, my 401(k), it's like half gone. I'm like, oh man, that's not good. But like, what is our hope really in, right? Hopefully something more. As I was thinking about this, I was going through the Psalms. I turned to Psalm 115, and I want to read verses 1 through 9 for us. It gives us a little bit of perspective. It says in verse 1 of Psalm 115, "Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name give glory. For the sake of your steadfast love and your faithfulness, why should the nations say, 'Where is their God?' Our God is in the heavens. He does all that pleases him. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths but do not speak, eyes but do not see. They have ears but do not hear, noses but do not smell. They have hands but do not feel, feet but do not walk, and they do not make a sound in their throat. Those who make them become like them, so do all who trust in them." Verse 9, "O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield." So what do we trust in? You know, it's really easy at the end of the day just to focus on what the world does, all the advertisements of what will make us happy, all the, you know, the supposed securities that sure, you retire, you know, you want to be able to do that, to live well, whatever that looks like, hopefully spending some of that retirement time serving the Lord. but then we read this, you know, it's like, what are all the things around us that we worship that, like, in James's context, and if you look back in the Psalms, that people were worshiping, like, statues, right? You know, and so there's still a little bit of that from Eastern religions that around now that you can see in our culture today, but, you know, we're like, you know, they're stupid because they worship statues. But then it's like, you know, you put your phone, but I worship this. You know, don't touch it. I need to keep it safe, right? You know, or my car that's going to get rusted out, or, you know, whatever else that you put value in. We're like, it's easy to look back in history and go, yeah, that statue clearly is not something to worship. But then we do it with everything else, and then we call the ancients silly, right? But when we read this, it's clear, like, that the perspective of the psalmist is like, you're worshiping things that aren't real. They're just material, right? They're not God. Interestingly enough, like what Andy had to say about the quiet time today in Jonah, you know, it's like there's all these guys on the ship, and of course Jonah knows he's the guy who's causing all this, like, you know, the ship's going back and forth, and they're like, we're going to die, and it's so important to them that they, you know, they survive. They're willing to throw their whole livelihood off the ship, so they do that, and then you know, they're talking amongst themselves, and they're all praying to their God, right? Little G, like Andy mentioned, and guess what they realize in all this interaction? They turn to Jonah, and he's like, yeah, I ran away from God, and they're like, you're a Hebrew, and you're running away from God? Because during that time, people knew who the one true God was. Even if they were worshiping a statue, they're like, oh, don't mess with the Hebrew God, because he's the real deal. And they're like, Jonah, what did you do? Like, what do we, they cast lots, sure enough. Jonah, yeah, all right, yeah. I mean, he did say it, but now we really have it confirmed. What do we have to do? Throw you off the ship? Okay, all right. I guess that's what we have to do. But you notice here, and the psalmist says something similar. He said, why should the nation say, where is their God? Our God is in the heavens, and he does all that pleases him. It's like, you know, the God that we worship, he's so far above everything else that we have going on in our lives, that we're like, we just need to turn our focus to him. And then everything becomes really, really clear, right? We're not like the guys on a ship who are worshiping other gods. We say that we worship the one true God, but then if we're being honest, like, sometimes it almost feels like that, right? We're like, why am I unhappy? Or why, you know, why are things, you know, I just don't understand. Like, I'm just discontented. And then it's like, you know, we're just like one of those other guys on the ship that's going like, you know, I don't understand what the problem is. I'm not really focusing on the one true God, right? But it was pretty clear to those guys on the boat that day, right? Would have liked to have been there. You know, another thing I was thinking about this week, it's like there's, you know, the season's ramping up, right? We're all like in stress mode because, you know, the holidays, like, I got to get this gift here, this thing. And then there's this, you know, there's all these parties coming up, right? It's supposed to be a happy time, you know? Jesus is born, right? It's what it's leading up to, but, you know, leave it to our culture, right? To create it, this stress storm leading up to Christmas and credit card debt and everything else. But we got to take a break. It was a nice break yesterday. We got to go to the Beauty and the Beast rendition. Aubrey and Natalie were in, and it just reminded me, as I was thinking about it, that there are these powerful stories that, you know, things like Disney movies and all this stuff, but there's a deeper story in all this. And, you know, if you follow the story, there's a powerful ruler, right, the beast, and he's confronted by this sorceress type of person who may not look as nice as everybody else. And he's like, oh, get away from me. No, there's nothing that I have to offer you. And because of this poor treatment, he ends up becoming the beast, right? And what are the consequences for all the other people who are in his, like, his kingdom? He gets turned into a beast, but they become like dresser drawers and candlesticks and like, who got the better end of the deal? I'm not sure. So, or clocks or whatever it is, you know, and we look at these stories and we're like, that's so silly. You know, like, what a, you know, fun, silly story, right? But what if we got this picture, like, is there, you know, we think about this play, like, there's some of us that are walking around, certainly our culture, that's walking around, it might as well just be big phones, right? Or their houses, or their cars, or, you know, they, you know, I don't know, you know, but I've got like a stockpile of gold in my safety deposit box, right? So, yeah, and that sounds ridiculous, but but this curse, the curse that was in the Beauty of the Beast, of course, it was broken by true love, right? True love, right? There's a better love, right? That breaks all that, right? The materialism, the you know, the not having to walk around like, you know, pretending. I know throughout the movie too, if you've watched the movie, you've seen the thing. There was one scene in there in particular that, you know, the Clogsworth character, he's like, there's something on my back, right? And I'd forgotten about that, but it's hilarious because he's like, no, tell me what it is. And the Lumiere character, the candlestick guy, he's like, it's like a mechanism. I think it's like a wind up. And they realize that, like, time is really short, right? They're like, oh no, remember over the years the curse has gotten worse and worse and worse, and now we're in this place where he's like, now he's got a wind-up gear. He's like, what? I mean, at some point I'm just going to stop being a person and I'm just going to be completely being an object. It's kind of like what Psalm 114 said. We worship all these things, and then just like our culture, we become like them, right? Now, I'm not saying don't have a house, right? Don't have a bed. Don't have a car. Don't have a phone, right? We operate with those things in our culture now, but at the same time, don't become like them, right? Don't become people who just worship them, and it's like, that's all we have, right? That's who we are. We'll be like the Lumiere and the Clogsworth characters who are like, I don't understand what's happening. Well, the curse is getting worse, right? Luckily, we have something that combats that, the love of God, and it can change us, right? Oh, we're only on point one. We should do the next one, right? Let's keep going. So I got caught up in the Beauty and the Beast stuff, and I was like, this is really good. I don't know. So, all right, second one, withholding. James chapter 5, verse 4. So you can put by withholding, we also keep good things from others, right? Now, some of us are just like, oh, I'm just holding on to my stuff, right? I'm not hurting anybody else. Until, you know, verse 4 comes and it says, behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. So withholding, we also keep good things from others, right? Now, most of us would say, well, you know, no, if I really saw a need or there's something I could do to help, you know, then I would do that. But we not only hold on to our stuff really tightly, right? We also, throughout life, go, I know that I could help there. I know I could fill this need. And then we're like, but no, I won't. I mean, no, he's going to know because, you know, obviously that was just between me and God. And, you know, outwardly, I go to church and I give, or I even volunteer and I'm a part of like ministries or outside organizations. And so people see that and they're like, you're good, right? You're not like the rest of the world. You're not like the Beauty and the Beast characters walking around being transformed into materials instead of being transformed into the likeness and the image of God. But yet we get to this point and we still say, no, that's not us. But yet when there's a need, when there's something that we know we ought to do, like last week, and we don't do it, James says, that's a sin too, right? And that's the tough part, because that's inside of ourselves. And like when the Spirit of God, as believers, right, if we have put our faith and trust in God, then he's pushing us towards doing something, right? Or affecting something, or giving something, or being generous with something. And then we say, yeah, I know, but I don't really want to, right? Then we withhold that, right? So that's the second one. And it reminded me of a parable in Luke chapter 10, parable of the Good Samaritan. I won't read all of it today, but what's the story, right? It was one of the main texts we used for VBS this year. I always remember that because we had Julian Jesus who was helping us out. He was one of the actors. And what's the story there? Here's a guy. He gets beat up, all of his stuff taken. He's left for dead. A priest walks by and says, oh, you know what? Not my kind of people. So, you know, somebody else will help you, right? And then a Levite walks by. And Jesus was doing this to illustrate the fact that, like, there's a lot of people who think they're good people, right? They're like, I'm doing good stuff. But then at the end of the day, it's like we see felt needs and then we don't help, right? And then he goes, so there's this last guy who's a Samaritan. By the way, Samaritans didn't really like the kind of person that was left there, right? And so they didn't have a good relationship. But the Samaritan, who had a lot of reasons not to help, said, I think I will help that guy. Hey, he puts him up. He gives money to the innkeeper. Right? Here, you take care of him. You know, when I come back, if there's anything else, I'll take care of it. But what do? Right? I think we a lot of times we fall under this umbrella of, well, inflation, taxes. I mean, I got all these kids. I gotta take care of them, right? Food, clothing, everything. I mean, it costs money, right? But we're good at making excuses. We're not really good at like looking at these texts and going like, James, you're right. I should do something different. We're good at going, he's not talking about me. He's not talking about me. That's the easy thing to do. another thing that came to my mind as I was reading this text was the story of the Hobbit. I mean, probably you guys have seen those movies. If you haven't, you read the books maybe. There was this true source of evil in it. And it was all centered around this treasure, right? So all these guys are trying to get back to this treasure and take back their homeland. And, of course, one of the Hobbits is there to help them. And when they're talking about this evil, this this source that was corrupting everything else, they called it the dragon sickness. And what was it? Well, you got Smaug there. He's just like swimming in all this gold and treasure there, and they're going back to take their homeland. But something that takes over, right? When Thorin Oakenshield, classic Thorin Oakenshield, who's read the books, he gets back and he's like, "We've taken the homeland." And then what happens to him? He catches the dragon sickness, right? He's like, riches, gold, treasure. And that's what it becomes about for him. And everybody else, it's like, you know, this is why we need Christian fellowship and community, because sometimes we even do it to ourselves. And we're like, I don't know what happened. And you're like, really? All the guys who were around Thorin were like, dude, you're just like Smaug. Like, we came here and he was sick and now you've got the same problem. So turning it back to the text, because I know we hear this and we're like, oh, but money's not bad, right? Well, agreed. 1 Timothy 6:6-10 says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. So where are we all at in all this, right? You know, it's easy to say, like, yeah, but I'm not like that. But when we start to examine our hearts, when it comes to, you know, reading the Psalms, looking at 1 Timothy, this really gives us perspective on what James is saying, and we can't just write it off, right? So number one, holding. We like to hold on to stuff. Makes us feel good, makes us feel comfortable. And then we withhold things at times from others, right? And I don't know what those are for you. I've done that too, and I'm like, after the fact, like, why'd I do that? I could have just easily, you know, I could have easily met that felt need. And we'll close with this. Closing. That's the last fill in the blank. Closing out the story. If you can't see it, I don't know if you can see it up there, right? I think there's a picture, yeah. It's the sun is coming. Daylight savings time, thank you for that. And there's a tombstone there behind the words. So in closing our stories, like, you know, it's easy to be like, yeah, people, when they remember me, they're going to think of, you know, really nice things to say. And but I wonder what they really will say. So in verse 5, it says, you've lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You fatten your hearts in the day of slaughter. Wow, okay. Some bad stuff there. So it's basically just all about you, right? It's all about us. And there's a couple of words there we'll look at, but a guy we've already quoted today, Caesarius of Arles, he said, these things which Christ threatened through the apostles should terrify us very much. Whoa, wait a second. He was like super positive in the the last statement. And then he turns it and he's like, there's really no way to get around this. Like, if we live in a certain way and we're just fixated on ourselves and it's all about like just making ourselves comfortable and not ever looking to the needs of others, and that can be through the church or even our own personal avenues, then we start to lose sight, right? Our hearts. What it says here, you have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. And some of us might say, well, some of that's not my fault. Right now, a couple years ago, after my dad had his first heart attack, went in, had the whole, you know, putting the stents in. It's really kind of cool how they do that stuff now. It's not like, it's less invasive, but still, it's a major procedure. And so I was thinking about that after the fact. Now, he had a heart attack, early 60s. My grandfather did. His grandfather did, too. So maybe there's a trend here. And after that, I talked with my mom about some health stuff. And she's like, yeah, I just found out that we've got this genetic predisposition towards developing this the bad cholesterol. I don't know what you call it, LDL, I think. And so that combined, you know, early heart attack in early 60s, I was like, maybe I should talk to my doctor about this. So I mentioned, he's like, yeah, we'll do the normal blood test. And sure enough, that year, took the blood test. He's like, yeah, you're like 32. This isn't where it should be. And so started making some changes. And I went in recently and got another test. And he's like, good news, it's going down. Like, you know, you always love when you hear from your doctor, you're like, you lost weight, good job, right? Or, you know, like, your bad cholesterol, it's going down, keep up the good work. Like, that's the kind of stuff, you know, I like to hear from my, you know, my doctor. But if we're being honest, there might be some of these areas in our lives where, you know, it's like what James says, like, we're collecting this bad cholesterol of a heart that's sick because we're so focused on ourselves all the time and we're not focused on other people or giving away or helping or being generous. And you just can't get around it. What James says, you've lived on the earth in luxury. Oh man, what is that word? It's the word trophéo in the Greek, to live delicately, live luxuriously, to be given to a soft and luxurious life. This is actually the only time it's used in all the New Testament, and it's a very important, very specific word. So again, like, is it, you're like, oh, we don't live like that, and, you know, but rest of the world, 91.8%, you know, it's easy to feel like that in our culture. But at the end of the day, like, we should still, no matter how we live, we should still gravitate towards being generous, towards giving things away, towards helping others. Because I don't know, I think as we read this, we're like, you know, it's just a list of things to do or not to do, and, you know, just make us feel bad. It's just about being a true believer. Right? And this is really all of James's focus. Like, if you're going to live a practical faith, he's like, I'm not going to pretend like some things aren't an issue. I'm not going to talk about things that make us uncomfortable. God's like, you need to hear all of it. And when he says this here, luxury, and then he uses this word, self-indulgence, it just means to live a life of pleasure. Now, some of us would go, well, you know what? You know, if I'm going out for, like, you know, my birthday, I want to get that piece of chocolate cake from the nice restaurant. I don't always go back to this, but it was Christy's birthday this week, and so we were out. We went to a nicer restaurant, and it's one of our traditions, right? We get the cake with the meal. Do we do that for every meal? No, because that would go bad. But we do that for nice occasions, right? And so I don't think James is looking at us and be like, don't enjoy nice occasions, right? Don't enjoy like some of the things that you can in life. No, he's God, through James, is saying, like, just think about how we live on a regular basis, right? Not being the killjoy, just being the guy that's saying, like, look, God wants us to think about how we live and how we operate on a regular basis. So we'll close with verse 6. It says, you have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you. What a great verse to close on. That's just, it was like hoping it was going to get better, and we could just keep reading, but we don't have the time, okay? So verse 6. You've condemned and murdered the righteous person. Well, what's the result of all this? Like, we hold on to our stuff, right? Or wherever we're at, And then we withhold from other people, right? Because we don't want anything to change about our lifestyle. We're like, inflation, right? I got to adjust and I got to make sure I can keep, you know, maintaining what I have right now. And then in thinking about how we close the story of our lives, like, you know, I don't know. I was just thinking about this. Like, would we want someone to have read an epitaph or a saying about us when we pass away and have it say any of these things? Like, they were focused about themselves. They had a good life. It was luxurious. But I don't know, they really helped anybody else. as believers, that's not really how it's supposed to be, right? We're condemned here. Just means to give judgment against or to pronounce guilt. It's used in Matthew 12:7. It says, "And if you had known what it means, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless." It's easy, right? It's easy to point the finger. Well, you have it better than I do, or I'm not really rich, or I'm not. God's just like, stop looking at everybody else. And that's what this great mirror of the Bible does for us, right? It gives us a true picture of ourselves, sometimes one we don't always want to see. And we read this and we're like, I didn't kill anybody. James, chill out, right? God, you know, relax or something. But we've condemned and murdered the righteous person because of all the actions we've already done, right? It's like if our life was like just about holding on to what we had, withholding from others, then the close of our story might look different than how it maybe should. I'll close with a story. It's really just an account of something that happened recently, the loss of the Ocean Gate sub. You probably, if you're in the room and you ever turned on a TV, you probably knew that happened this year. there were some individuals that went down on that little sub surveying the wreckage of the Titanic. I guess since it's gone down, it's been something of intrigue to people. And so on that same day that it went down, June 22nd, 2023, sub was lost pressure, and I don't know, it just got crumpled, right? And so that's not fun for us to think about. But then I was thinking about this, I was reading this text today. So in some ways, what is being well off? What is being rich? What is just like focusing on, like, you know, gaining like the unattainable experience? You know, it's like, but I went and saw the wreckage of the Titanic. I mean, who can say that they saw that with their eyes at the bottom of the ocean? And what does that merit? What does that need? It needs having some material wealth, some position, some power, some authority to gain a seat. But what was the seat that was gained as a result of that? Well, it was the last ride that they had. And while those things, again, all these experiences in life, things that we can experience, they're not necessarily bad or intrinsically evil, but some of the steps that we take to get to that point of holding, of withholding, we find ourselves maybe closing out our story and then just not realizing like how we spent all of our time. Like, what was our focus on? Was it on us? Was it on our material wealth? Was it on the needs around us? you can't get through the book of James and not go, there's some things that like I should really focus on. A lot of some of the things that Jesus even talked about. What did he do? He usually met a felt need, fed a bunch of people, healed something, fixed something, and then, oh, there's something greater? Yeah, good news, that you can know God personally, that you don't have to live going throughout this life without having a direct connection to God. So I'll read his words again, and then we'll close. In Matthew 6:19-21, it says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth or rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So here's the good news. I mean, all of us in the room, hopefully, if you've not made a decision to put your faith and trust in God through what Jesus Christ has done for us on the cross, and you can make that decision today, whether you're here in person, whether you're listening online, it's as easy as this. You admit you're a sinner, believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross for your sins and was raised on that third day, and then confess with your mouth that he's the Lord of your life. The Bible tells us we can be saved, we can know God, we can walk in faith, and then as a result of all this, we can look at our lives and go like, what is my life really about? Is it about the things of God? Is it not? Am I generous? Do I hold on to what I have? Do I withhold from others when I see needs? And in the light of our story ending, and it will, right? There's always an end to the story. Luckily for Beauty and the Beast, the beauty saved the beast, true love conquered. And even greater than that, what do we have? Well, a love in God for what he's done for us. And luckily we can give that to anybody else. It's free. You don't have to pay for it. And we can walk out of this place knowing today that we have an eternal home with God in heaven forever. So my hope is that that changes maybe the way that we live and operate. James gives us practical ways to do that. So let's walk out of this place and do that together, okay? Let me pray for you. Father, we come to you today and thank you for the word, how it transforms us, how unlike in a fairy tale, those are transformed into objects. God, it almost seems like you wrote part of this story in Psalm 115 where there are those who spend their time worshiping things that aren't real, and in the end, they become like them, lifeless. They're lost without knowing you, without finding true life and hope in this great gospel that you've given us, that we can have eternal life, that we can be with you in heaven forever, and that in comparison with the material wealth, with the pleasures of this life, they're so fleeting, they're so short. Help us to, in that understanding, God, that we might leave this place and know that holding on to stuff, there's really no point. we don't take any of it with us, as 1 Timothy says, and to withhold, God, things from other people that we could fill a need. God, help us to be more about that. God, that as we close our story, we might think about how this end result of how we lived will really paint this picture for those that come after us. God, may we be a good example to our fellow believers here in the room of that. When the story ends for us, we pray that true happiness, as we know it, would not be about material wealth, acquisition, possession, but it would be about helping others. God, simply doing what you've called us to do here, and then point everyone to you that you might receive the glory. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.